I understand why we're the underdog. I get that. We had some ups and downs during the season. I never feel like an underdog going into a game, but it's been situated that way. But it is what it is.
It is what it is, and this is the Sports Ticket. It is what it is, brought to you by Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit, your home for fast, friendly auto repair. Andy Reid talking about being an underdog. I think the underdog role serves the Chiefs very well. It's worked so far in the playoffs. Why not finish it out and ride it all the way to a Lombardi Trophy in the win Super Bowl 58 in honor of Derek Thomas, who wore number 58, who passed away 24 years ago yesterday. That would be kind of a bow to this whole thing for the Chiefs. For, of course, the 49ers standing in the way of the Chiefs from accomplishing that. We'll preview Super Bowl 58 coming up in a little bit. We'll break it down by positions. We will look at the keys, the concerns, our predictions, and so forth and so on. NFL honors was last night, and the most valuable player still not playing. He's done for the season, knocked out by a quarterback named Patrick Mahomes of the Kansas City Chiefs. And also, we got some Big 12 big games coming up tomorrow for number 4 Kansas and the K-State men trying to win on the road at number 21 BYU. And a sad situation with a former Kansas Jayhawk needing a heart transplant. We'll tell you about that. And the NBA trade deadline was yesterday. A few notable trades that took place. But we begin with local sports, and there was basketball and wrestling yesterday.
Yes, high school hoops yesterday, makeup game, St. John's Tipton and Osborne. As the girls side of things, St. John's Tipton won 49-45. Osborne boys won 67-54 over the Blue Jays. So a split there in Beloit last night at St. John's Catholic High School. Also, it was Thunder Ridge hosting Sylvan Lucas last night. Sylvan Lucas getting a sweep, 63-28 in the girls' game, and the Sylvan Lucas boys won 51-38. So let's look at immediate area basketball scores from last night. As far as wrestling was concerned, Beloit winning over Minneapolis, 46-27. Smith Center beat Republic County, 34-28 in the duel, and Concordia beat Clay Center, 36-31. So those are the scores from immediate area action last night. If you ever miss any of the scores, want the schedules for all your favorite teams, you can always visit ncksports.com. Pick back up with high school basketball here this evening on Katy Country 94 and katycountry94.com. We have Lakeside, or excuse me, Rock Hills at Lincoln. Did Lakeside at Lincoln a couple weeks back, but we have Rock Hills at Lincoln tonight. We'll preview that coming up here momentarily, but we'll give you the rest of the schedule first. Lakeside is actually at Southern Cloud tonight in Northern Plains League action. St. John's Tipton hosting Stockton in Tipton. Also, Thunder Ridge hosting Tescott. Pike Valley is at Natoma. Sylvan Lucas at Lynn. Smith Center hosting Norton, and Concordia's at home against Chapman. The MCL and NCKL matchups there that I mentioned last. You can, again, find the full schedules, as always, at ncksports.com if you're interested in seeing what's going on with the rest of the North Central Activities Association and the complete area schedules for the weekend. Smith Center Wrestling, by the way, also has a duel at Plainville tonight as far as local sports is concerned here today. Again, high school hoops continuing tonight as we have the doubleheader in the Northern Plains League with the Rock Hills Grizzlies going to Lincoln to take on the Leopards. These two teams actually met once already this season, and they played January 19th as a makeup or a scheduled game in for the Miss part of the Northern Plains League tournament there. Rock Hills girls won 41-31 the first time the two teams played. And in this rematch, Rock Hills is 6-8 and 3-3 in the NPL. Lincoln's 4-9 and 3-4. And Rock Hills coach Nick Meisner on this second meeting here tonight.
I expect to see some different stuff from them to confuse our girls a little bit offensively, and we'll have to work on that. But, you know, they're athletic, they're deep, they're fast. They struggle to score at times like we do. So, you know, it was a battle the first time, and, you know, we're going down to their place this time, and I see a different game coming.
Yeah, as I'm prepping for this game, both of these teams are actually kind of on the upswing recently, scoring more points, getting more offense going. So Rock Hills Lincoln girls will be an interesting game tonight. In the boys game, Lincoln won by just 6 points, 45-39, the first time the two teams played. But the Leopard boys are trending up as well. They're 7-6, 4-2 in the NPL. Grizzlies are 4-10 and 2-4 in the Northern Plains League. And the Rock Hills coach, Zach Duffy, offering some keys for the rematch against Lincoln here tonight.
If we can, you know, take better care of the ball and get better shots and be a little more deliberate on the offensive end, and then really work to keep them off the glass, which is tough because they're athletic and they're big, then I think we're going to be right where we need to be.
Zach Duffy, coach of the Rock Hills boys. Again, Lincoln and Rock Hills are really expecting a couple decent games here tonight, close games possibly. And as if you look at the first two meetings, so excited about the opportunity tonight. Again, Rock Hills at Lincoln on Kitty Country 94 and kittycountry94.com. We'll have pregame at 5:50 and tip off at 6 o'clock here this evening. So that's what's going on as far as high school hoops is concerned. It is hard to believe, but postseason is actually here for wrestling coming up this weekend. Coming up tomorrow, 11 area girls will compete for a chance at the 4 through 1A state tournament in wrestling. Beloit will be at the 4 through 1A regional McPherson, while Osborne and Smith Center will travel to Scott City. In McPherson, there are two ranked teams competing. Pratt is number 3, Winfield number 4. Individually, there are 25 ranked wrestlers at the event, and Beloit will send 4. Zeta Purvis at 115, Riley Croyson at 125, Lily Noe at 140, and Caitlin Bender will wrestle at 170 pounds. So that's a look at the lineup for Beloit going into tomorrow at McPherson. And we had a chance to catch up with Kate Hewitt this week, and he's excited for the opportunity for his girls coming up tomorrow in McPherson.
We're excited to give those girls one last opportunity to show how much they've improved this year and to see if we can get them to battle through and qualify for the state tournament.
Again, there's these 4 through 1As, there's four regionals with around 36 teams at every single one of them. So it's a tough tournament, and just talking with Coach Hewitt, he knows that it'll be a tough go for his group to try to get some into the state tournament a couple weeks from now in Salina. So that's Beloit again at McPherson. Moving to Scott City, 4 through 1A regional, three teams are state ranked. Oakley's number 1, and they're at the tournament. Hoisington number 8, Colby number 9, 23 individually ranked wrestlers at this one. As far as Osborne's concerned, Kate Kendig at 110 pounds, Annie Kendig at 115, and Cheyenne Knoll at 135 are all wrestling here on Saturday. And all three of those wrestlers do have winning records, but they're coming off of a weekend at Phillipsburg where they maybe didn't perform where they might have, according to Jason Knoll, the head coach of the Bulldogs. And he talks about his team's chance and knows it will be a tough tournament on Saturday.
It's going to be tough. Our girls are going probably to one of the toughest regionals in the state, unfortunately, but we're going to have to win two or three matches that we're not supposed to even qualify one of them. I have confidence that we're going to fix our problems, but we still got to show up on Saturday and prove that we belong here, and I have confidence that we're going to do that.
Again, Osborne girls competing at Scott City. Also, Smith Center will send four wrestlers to Scott City. Nevaeh Rohan at 125, Chloe Petty at 135, Casey Harrodsburg at 190, and Sadie Liddow at 235. And the first-year head coach of the Smith Center Redmen, or Lady Red in this case, Avery Hawkins, on the competition here this weekend and his Lady Red wrestlers.
It's going to be extremely tough. But 4 through 1A, man, there's going to be a ton of teams, a ton of good competition. It's going to be really tough to get through. So if we can come out of our regional especially, I feel like, is extremely difficult. So if we're able to get anybody out of our region, I think that we will have a really good chance of placing in Salina. And I'm looking forward to it. I think we've got a couple girls that really have a chance.
Again, regional wrestling for Smith Center and Osborne taking place in Scott City tomorrow. And for Beloit, it's at McPherson. The top four wrestlers, placers in each weight class advance to the state tournament in Salina, as Coach Hawkins mentioned there, and that will be February 22nd through 24th. They're running the girls' state tournament at the same time that they'll run the 4A and 3-2-1A boys' state tournaments there in Salina, coming up there, again, the 22nd through 24th three-day tournament. Best of luck to all those 11 area wrestlers on the girls' side that will be competing there. Follow me on Twitter, at Dusty40. I'll probably throw some updates on there as far as how the girls are doing and how they fare at regional wrestling coming up tomorrow in McPherson and Scott City.
Hard to believe postseason is here. You got regional wrestling for the boys next weekend, state wrestling after that. You got state wrestling with girls and boys. You got the regional girls wrestling coming this weekend. And before we know it, we'll have sub-state basketball. So, yeah, it goes by very, very quickly. I was talking with somebody yesterday about that. I was like, it's hard to believe I have a senior already. So it makes you feel old. And then I get these memories popping on Facebook. I'm like, huh, 8 years ago. Doesn't seem that long ago. Man. What's going to happen? You know, the other thing I do with this is I see 8 years ago. I'm like, okay, that, you know, a lot's happened 8 years. Doesn't seem like it's been 8 years. And I'm like, oh, dear God, 8 years from now is going to be fast, too.
Yeah.
And then 8 years from now, we'll look back and go, oh, I remember when he was a senior. You know, that type of thing. It's just
out in the real world doing stuff, you hope. Yeah. But,
I might be a grandpa for 8 years
exactly.
From now.
It's like,
please, no sooner than 8 years. Please, no sooner than 8 years.
Yeah, it does. Just, I was actually thinking about that, not about that part of it, but like, last night I was doing my sport. How is it Friday already? Just everything just goes fast time of year.
Yeah.
All the time, but at this time of year for sure.
I have to admit, Tuesday I thought it was Friday, so it's been a long week. I was talking with Eric Shoup. He's an assistant coach for the Minneapolis girls, and he used to be the head coach of the boys, and they got state runner-up a couple years. And he was one of my dorm mates at Bethany College. First 2 years I went to Bethany College before I transferred to Pittsburgh State. So I went up to him and I talked to him. He and I both less hair than we had back then.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't seem that long ago we were in college having a good old time, you know.
Yeah.
And so I was chatting with him a little bit. And I said, man, I said, you know, we're getting old. I said, you're coaching your daughter. She's a senior. I've got my oldest now is a senior. Of course, he has older kids as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, man, you know, this is going by fast. We're getting old. He says, yeah, tell me about it. Now I'm a grandpa now. I'm like, get out of town. You're a grandpa. Grandpa Shoup? Poppy Shoup? What? He's like, yeah. And I think he said the grandkid was only a few months old. And I said, well, now I feel younger by talking to you when you say that.
Thanks for that.
I'm like, I'm not a grandpa yet. And please, like I said, let's wait at least 8 years till my oldest is 25. Establish your career at least a little bit and go to college and do what you got to do. But, time flies by, no question about it. Hey, coming up in 30 seconds, we're going to preview Super Bowl 58. I don't know if you know this or not, but the Chiefs are in it again.
I'm Elijah at Kiever Brothers Automotive in Beloit. Did you know that we sell tires? We also perform alignments and all the other services that go along with them. We handle all the top brands, extras like road hazard warranty, complimentary tire rotations, and complimentary tire repairs are available for purchase on most tires. Right now, we are offering $80 off when you buy a set of four. Call or stop by Kiever Brothers Automotive for fast, friendly tire services today. Find us just south of the courthouse in Beloit or on the web at KieverBrothers.com.
It's humbling because I never thought I would be in this many Super Bowl games, honestly. I mean, you strive to be great, but you understand how hard it is to even be in this game. And for us to be in my fourth one in my 6 years of starting, it truly is remarkable. And I don't take it for granted because you never know if you're going to be able to be back in this game. I'm doing whatever it takes for this Super Bowl win for sure.
Yeah, you don't know. I mean, Chiefs fans just assume that, you know, Chiefs are going to make a Super Bowl like another 8, 9, 10 times every year Mahomes is the quarterback, which, I mean, why wouldn't you think that you could make it every year? The worst you've done is the AFC title game and lost in overtime.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't even get beat by in regulation in a conference title game. I mean, it is insane how spoiled Chiefs Kingdom is. Do we deserve everything that we're getting right now? I like to think we do because of all the heartache we went through. But you know what's coming around the corner is post-Mahomes. Not post-Malone.
Yeah.
Post-Mahomes at some point. And once again, I just talk about how time flies. Hard to believe Mahomes is already now completing his 6 year as a starter, 7 years in the league. And next thing you know, 8 years from now, when I'm a grandpa, apparently, Mahomes will be 36. And who knows? He might not even be in the league anymore. And you'll have some Joe Schmo cast off veteran retread at quarterback, and the Chiefs are just trying to make the playoffs and get a wild card. And we'll be like, wow.
Remember
really
the time.
Should have soaked that up a little bit more. That's how you should feel. You know, if you're a Royals and a Chiefs fan, you should already have this figured out. You should not be taking this for granted. Just see how quickly the Royals went from winning a World Series to a few years later losing 100 games, and now, you know, 9 years later, 106 losses. So you need to really appreciate this Chiefs Kingdom. Don't take it for granted. The fact the Chiefs are in the Super Bowl again, when some of you, and you know who you are, wrote this team off and said that there was no way they were going to do it. They're here, and now they're one win away from accomplishing back-to-back Super Bowl championships, which would absolutely cement their legacy as a dynasty, without question. First of all, let's hear Andy Reid on the differences and similarities with the 49ers from the Super Bowl 54 win that the Chiefs had, 31-20, and they were trailing in the fourth quarter, to this year's 49ers team that's in the Super Bowl.
Well, actually, there are quite a few of the same guys, and they played at a very high level then. I think they're even better now. McCaffrey would be new. I'd say he's a pretty big ingredient, and the quarterback's new, and he's a heck of a football player. But the rest of the surrounding cast is very similar to what they had before.
Similar, true. Obviously, the big notable differences, McCaffrey, and obviously Brock Purdy, who I think is better than Jimmy Garoppolo. And, you know, you go back to that Super Bowl, I think a lot of Chiefs fans conveniently forget about this. They remember the Wasp, the 3rd and 15 play. They remember Damian Williams' touchdown run, so forth and so on. But if Jimmy Garoppolo completes a pass to Emmanuel Sanders down the middle of the field in that game, it very well is a Chiefs loss. And, of course, last year, I mean, if you look at the Chiefs-Eagles, if Nick Bolton doesn't get – they don't get a strip-sack fumble and return for a touchdown, did the Chiefs come back and win that game? And so you expect this game to be tight. You expect it to come down to the wire. And that leads us to a breakdown of Super Bowl 58 here on the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit. And by the way, the Niners apparently are not happy again because they were awakened when the fire alarm went off at their hotel. So nice job, Chiefs fan, that pulled the fire alarm. I hope you enjoy time in prison. Maybe not prison, but it'll be fine.
It's probably that same guy that buried the Chiefs flag when they were making the stadium out
Could
there.
Could be. Could be the same person pulled the fire alarm at the hotel we stayed in not too long ago in Kansas City and had to get up, and we thought the place was on fire at 3 in the morning. Yeah. That was convenient with the kiddos and everything else.
Yeah.
That was a loud noise.
I'd imagine so.
Safe to know that everything worked.
It worked. Yeah. I guess that's a test of that, but you don't really want it.
I don't think I need a fire drill at 3 in the morning, but that's just me. But when you look at the Chiefs and the 49ers, when you break this down, clearly everybody's going to say that the Chiefs have an advantage at quarterback, right?
Yes.
You're not going to contest that?
I would think that everybody's going to say that.
Okay, so let's go at positions here, all right? So the Chiefs had advantage at quarterback. Running back, who has the advantage?
The 49ers.
True. Wide receiver, who has the advantage?
I'd say the 49ers.
Okay, I'm going to keep track of this here. Okay, so running back, wide receiver, Chiefs got the quarterback. Okay. Tight end, who has the advantage?
The Chiefs.
Okay. I'll agree with you there, although Kittle's not too far
off. No, it's not far, but at this time of year, I think it's amplified who has the advantage.
Offensive line, who has the advantage?
I don't know enough about that. I'll say the 49ers, since the Chiefs have a guy out. I honestly just don't know enough about their line.
49ers are not great offensive line. Trent Williams is the big one. I'm going to call that a wash, honestly.
It could be for me, too.
If Joe Tooney was playing, I'd pick
Chiefs. Yeah, I would, too, for sure. Yeah.
I'll say it's a wash. Defensive line, who do you think has the advantage, Niners or the Chiefs?
I'm going to say the Niners.
Okay, so defensive line goes to the Niners. All right. I think that's closer than people think.
I do, too.
Linebackers?
Probably Niners if the Chiefs were all the way healthy.
Yeah.
You know.
I think it's a dead heat. I mean, you take Willie Gay if he plays, Drew Tranquil if Willie Gay doesn't play, Nick Bolton, Fred Warner, Dre Greenlaw. I mean.
Yeah, it is. It's.
It's slim pickings. I mean, it's razor
thin. For sure.
But, okay, we'll go with what you said. Defensive backs, who has the advantage?
Yeah, I feel like the Chiefs have the advantage there.
Okay, I agree with you on that with Snead and McDuffie.
Yeah.
Kicker, who has the advantage?
The Chiefs.
Yes, I agree with that.
I think they have the advantage at kicker against anybody in the league right now.
I agree with you on that. So those are the, you know, the main positions, everything right there that we went through. We didn't go by, you know, every single position, left guard, left tackle, center, and so forth and so on. So based on what you just and how you answered that, and I'll go with your answers, which I don't really disagree, we've got four position groups that the Niners have the advantage, four that the Chiefs have an advantage, and one that we're calling a wash.
Yeah. And really, I think you could do that with OL and linebacker both, you know.
Right. Right. So.
So, close on all accounts, right?
So, okay, coaching, who would you give advantage to?
The Chiefs, for sure.
Okay, so let's go ahead and go with what you said. So it's pretty much dead even. So if it's dead even, who would you lean towards? Well, quarterback's pretty big.
Quarterback and coach.
And coach. So if you break it down by positions and by position groups, and you know, listen, I think the Chiefs have an advantage at quarterback. I don't think it's as big as people think it is.
Based
on this year,
talent level, skill, what happened throughout the whole year, it's closer than people think.
Well, I'll say talent level is not that close.
Well, not talent level, but just
production.
How the year went. Yeah.
Production is close. Talent level.
No.
Not insult Patrick.
No, not talent. I didn't mean to say talent and all that. I just was kind of.
One was a seventh round draft pick, Mr. Irrelevant. The other was traded up for a first round, all the way from 27 to 10. So, talent, let's not even go there.
I was just combining everything that happened basically this year.
I know, but at production-wise, it's not as far the difference between Purdy and Mahomes. And I think you could argue that Purdy has the better set of weapons than Mahomes has. especially at wide receiver. And tight end's not a much of a difference. I mean, Kelsey's a little bit better than Kittle. Kelsey's a little bit older, too. You know, running back, everybody thinks it's a huge advantage for the Niners. I would say that the Chiefs, that's not as wide a gap as some people may think either, if Pacheco's healthy and ready to go. Linebackers, you gave that to the Niners, but I could make a case it's pretty much a wash. Mm-hmm. Defensive line, you gave it to the Niners. I could make an argument. Well, if Omenihu was playing.
That's why I gave it to the Niners.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit wider than maybe.
Edge is healthy for the Niners. Right. It's not for the Chiefs all the way around.
The biggest advantage the Niners have is at wide receiver. If you compare groups.
For sure.
Yeah. And the biggest advantage the Chiefs have probably would be, I would say quarterback still. Moody's the kicker for the Niners is a rookie, so how's he going to handle everything in that mm-hmm. situation? And this isn't a dome, and Mahomes does extremely well in a dome. 26 touchdowns, 2 interceptions in his career mm-hmm. in a dome. So basically what we're saying is this is a pretty even matchup. So you have to go down to the X factors. And is the X factor Patrick Mahomes? Is the X factor the Chiefs' defense? Because the Chiefs' defense overall is better than that. See, if you went another step further, who has the best defense? The Chiefs do.
Yeah.
Who has the best offense? The Niners do.
Yeah.
Who have the best special teams unit? I would argue the Chiefs do. So it is very razor thin. The Niners are a 2-point favorite. And I think if Mahomes wasn't involved in this whole equation, let's say it was Alex Smith, the Niners would be a 5-point.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Or bigger. The over-under on this thing is 47.5. We'll go through our predictions in a moment. But it's pretty even. And now it leads us to the keys to this game. What's the biggest key or keys to this game, in your opinion? What needs to happen for the Chiefs to hoist another Lombardi and cement their dynasty and go back to back? What is a key or two for you for the Chiefs to win? These things have to happen for the Chiefs to win.
It's like a broken record with this team, but I feel like just winning the turnover battle is always for me something that goes into that, but not. I'm trying not to say the same things that I say every game with this team, but if creating a turnover is going to be that's what it was with Baltimore, and I really think like that.
But it wasn't in Buffalo.
It wasn't in Buffalo. But when you're in with teams like these, where they're not, you don't feel like they're going to make as many mistakes. You got to capitalize when they do. And
but what happens if there are no turnovers? The Chiefs can't win with no turnovers?
They can.
No, but both teams don't turn over at all, or turnover margin is even. The Chiefs can't win?
Yeah, turnover margin's even because if they created a turnover, if they do that. But if there's no turnovers, turnover margin's even. I guess
what I'm asking is, do you think the Chiefs have to force a turnover to win this game?
Not necessarily, I guess.
I don't, because if you're saying that, you believe that the Chiefs need, then you believe that they are significantly the underdog. They need that big turnover to win this game. I would argue they don't.
Yeah.
I would argue both teams could turn over once and both teams get 3 points off of it. Both teams turn over once and you each get a touchdown off of it. Both teams turn over once, nobody scores off of it. Or both teams don't turn the ball over. I can't believe you didn't answer this the way I thought you were going to. Because it's the obvious thing that we've been talking about for freaking all year long. What's the number one key in this game for the Chiefs? Don't beat themselves. I can't believe you didn't start with that, because that's what you've been saying all year, and I agree with you. Like, don't beat yourself. Don't turn the ball over, okay? And I'm not worried about the turnover margin per se. It's instead of worrying about forcing a turnover,
don't turn
it over.
Yeah.
Don't turn it over, okay? Whether you force turnovers or not, you yourself have a goose egg. You don't turn it over. You don't have multiple drop passes. Could you have a drop pass or two in this game and win? Yes. Can you have 5 drops in this game and win? Probably not. So you got to minimize the drops, and you got to eliminate the dumb penalties. Can't be lining up offsides on a touchdown play, and that would help if Tony's not active. But to me,
it's everything I've been saying.
Right.
I wanted to say something different.
You don't have to, because it doesn't change.
No, it doesn't.
The Chiefs' biggest opponent, their toughest opponent this year in the last few years.
Always themselves.
Is themselves.
Yeah.
Hey, look in the mirror. It's themselves. You know, if Juwan Taylor and Donovan Smith don't hold up at tackle, the Chiefs are going to turn the ball over. Mahomes is going to get strip sacked and fumble, or he's going to throw a pass that gets deflected, or he's going to throw a pick six possibly. I mean, the Chiefs just got to play. To me, this is just me, I don't think the Chiefs have to take tons of chances to win this game. I truly do not.
No.
I think the Chiefs simply need to not beat themselves. And if both teams don't beat themselves and play pretty even football, then guess what? It's going to come down to the final possession. And I like the final possession with the Chiefs defense on the field. And I like the Chiefs final possession with Mahomes on the field. So if it comes down to final possession in the past, I'm like, damn, we got to have Mahomes on the field. We can't let the defense be out there all game long. With this defense, number two in the league, and with Spags and what he's doing and with the playmakers he has in the secondary and what he has at linebacker. And yes, Oemenu, who is not there. Chris Jones can wreck a game. I'm sitting here and I'm saying to myself, if this game just goes a little bit, I guess it kind of could be boring from a standpoint of there's not really any major mistakes by either team. There's not turnovers. There's not drop passes. There's not like egregious penalties. And if that's the case, odds are this game's going to be close. And if this game is close in the fourth quarter and it's Brock Purdy versus the Chiefs defense and it's Mahomes versus the Niners defense, who you picking? I'm picking Chiefs defense and I'm picking Mahomes on offense. So I am not afraid of a close game where it comes down to the end.
No.
I think that bodes well for the Chiefs, to be quite frank with you. But for me, the ultimate key is the one I thought you would say, which you've been saying all year long, and you're absolutely 1,000% correct. The biggest key is don't beat yourself. Now, that's the obvious one. The next one, you're talking turnover margin or forced turnovers. I definitely can entertain that. Another key for me in this game is, and it sounds crazy, but I think one of the keys to this game that a lot of people are overlooking, and after I saw what happened in the Detroit game, and the Chiefs, I don't know how they're going to treat Brock Purdy, because obviously you have McCaffrey's a game breaker, Kittle's outstanding, Ayuk is underrated, Debo Samuel's amazing. They have an all-pro left tackle on Trent Williams, so it'd be hard to get the quarterback from that side of things probably. But to me, one of the bigger keys that's being overlooked in this game is what the Chiefs did the first two games against mobile quarterbacks that could run and move and scramble, such as Lamar Jackson, such as Josh Allen. Is Brock Purdy in that echelon? No.
No.
But when you are so worried about covering so many weapons, what ends up killing you? The quarterback running.
Gets free, yeah.
And that's what Mahomes has done many years with the great weapons he has. Oh, my God, we got a double Kelsey. We got a double Tyreek back in the day. Or we got to worry about this guy. And then the next thing you know, Mahomes just scrambles for 15 on a third and 13. Brock Purdy did that last 2 weeks ago in the NFC title game against the Lions. If not for Brock Purdy's legs, the Niners are not in this game today, on Sunday. So that, I think, is a little bit of a bigger key than people think. And I do believe that Spags knows how to control that part because they've done it the last 2 weeks. But the question then would be, if, and that shouldn't be your top concern, stopping the quarterback from running, but it has to be, you know, on your mind. But if you can, you know, do you want to make him roll out and throw on the run? Yeah. But do you want him to take off and running? No. And so I think that's a little bit of a predicament for Steve Spagnuolo, because Purdy, if he has time in the pocket, is a pretty accurate passer, and he's got all those weapons for the Chiefs to cover. So my question, I think, is how important is pressure? Because if they get a pass rush and they don't contain the lanes for Purdy to run through, I think I could see him having a couple big runs to keep a drive alive. And then all of a sudden you're trying to account for that, and then something else pops open in their offense. So that's something to keep an eye on. I'm not saying it's the biggest key, but it's an overlooked key, I think, to this game. Anything else that stands out to you about what you're looking at here other than the Chiefs not beating themselves?
No, it's all the same stuff. It's converting.
Got to tackle on the open field.
You know,
with Samuel and McCaffrey, you got to tackle on the open field.
Yeah, for sure. And you know,
slow down the running game. You don't want the Niners in, you know, third and two all night long.
With what they can do on offense, it would behoove you to finish in the red zone with touchdowns instead of field goals.
That's true.
You know, yeah. I do believe that always helps, obviously.
Yeah,
but
right.
with the dynamic of what the 49ers could be offensively, if you're not zoned in all night, then you're going to need some touchdowns in this game. I don't think you're going to win this game 17-10. I could be wrong, but if you can finish off with six instead of three, that's going to help you out a lot.
I'm fascinated by Spags' defensive game plan Sunday. You've got a younger quarterback. He's a second-year starter. He has not been in this big a game in his entire life. He performed pretty well in the first. He didn't play well against the Packers, but came through when they really needed a fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. He played pretty well against the Lions, in particular the second half, and they've rallied twice from behind in the playoffs. So if the Chiefs get a lead, that doesn't mean they're going to win this thing. But I'm fascinated and so curious as to what Spags is going to do defensively, because against Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, he didn't blitz nearly as much. But now you got a younger second-year quarterback. Do you bring the heat and gamble with those weapons and play man-to-man? And you've got, you know, McDuffie on Ayuk and Snead. Like, who's Snead going to defend? Is Snead going to be on Ayuk? And then McDuffie's going to be on Samuel? And then who's going to defend Kittle? You know, these are questions that I have. Who's going to pick up McCaffrey out of the backfield? If it's McCaffrey versus the linebacker, Tranquil's not the guy. Willie Gay is athletic enough. I don't know how effective he's going to be. Nick Bolton's a mismatch. So, you know, the Chiefs going to have an extra defensive back on the field, and then that means that the Niners could run the ball more effectively. And if you have an extra DB out there, that you're going to say, okay, you're going to be, you know, covering McCaffrey for the most part. McCaffrey can line up as a wide receiver. He goes in motion. He can be in the backfield. There's so many things that he can do. I'm really fascinated by, you know, because I think the easy thing to say is, to answer the question I'm posing out there for everybody, I think the easy thing to say is, well, of course he's going to bring blitzes because he's going up against a second-year quarterback. You don't think Kyle Shanahan's going to be prepared for that? I guarantee he will be. And the other thing is that this team has as many weapons as anybody the Chiefs have seen all year long, probably more weapons than anybody they've seen this year. And so when you blitz against teams that don't have as many weapons, it's obviously more effective. But, you know, when you can just, you bring a blitz and there's McCaffrey to dump into the flat, next thing you know, he's only got two guys to beat and everybody else is man-to-man coverage, and he goes for a 60-yard touchdown pass on a swing.
Yeah.
So I am a little bit about concern, but I'm wondering, you know, how effective will the blitzes be? Now, in third and long obvious situations, I think he's bringing it. He didn't necessarily do it against the Ravens or the Bills. I think he will in this game. Like, third and 15, let's see if Purdy can make a throw. And Purdy can't. So that's something that I'll be looking at as well. Anything else that you can think of? What's your biggest concern with this game? Let's shift to that. What's your biggest concern in this game?
Well, I think my biggest concern is just in general what the 49ers can do offensively. Mm-hmm. And can the Chiefs go ahead and neutralize that like they have been a lot of the other teams that they've been playing this year? Because I'm trying to think in my head of anybody that they would have faced that has this dynamic of an offense when they're clicking and have everybody healthy, right? And I think if the Dolphins would have been healthy, that would have been the team. But I don't think either time they played the Dolphins, yeah, they were 100%. So it's that for me. Mm-hmm. You're concerned about all the weapons that the 49ers have and how that could open Brock Purdy up.
Well, the one thing the Dolphins don't have, they didn't have a great tight end like George Kittle.
No, not at all. And so that probably for me, the offense is what it is, you know, right now. I think if Mahomes can play smart like he's been here in the postseason, I'm not as concerned about that going into it. But yeah, it's interesting. I agree with you. It's going to be interesting to see what the scheme is. But the thing is, like, he's so good, Spags is, about adjusting at halftime when he sees something that he doesn't like or needs to change something. When they get in that locker room, it seems like something happens there that he's really, really good at adjusting to. So I am – that probably is my biggest concern about what they can do offensively. But at the same time, you know, the defensive coordinator the Chiefs have has been able to neutralize a lot of that this year.
Okay, so it is time for our predictions. The 49ers are favored by 2 points. The over-under is 47.5. And I am going to go first. I don't want Dusty stealing my pick. I am taking the Chiefs, and I'm going to get a little bit specific here. The Chiefs beat the Niners. 23-20 is the final, so it's under the 47.5. And a couple of bold predictions here. Trent McDuffie will have an interception in this game. And Jake Moody will miss a 48, 49-yard field goal at the end of the game. He'll miss it, and the Chiefs will run off the field. Super Bowl champions after a rookie kicker misses a kick to tie and force overtime.
Tyler Bass, that thing, huh? Of course, that was not at the buzzer.
It wasn't at the buzzer. Yeah. This is going to be at the buzzer. The Chiefs won basically at the buzzer last year with a short field goal after the holding penalty on the Eagles. Now, a year later, they're going to win, sweating it out, whether Moody's going to make a long kick. I'll just say a 50-yarder. He's going to kick a 50-yarder. He's going to miss it, and the Chiefs win 23-20.
I'm not prepared to get that specific with it, but
loser.
I think the Chiefs are going to get a late score in a tight ball game, and the defense is going to hold in like the final minute. 27-20 is what I got.
27-20. All right, my MVP of the game. It almost always goes to the quarterback, so I'll say it's Mahomes. That'll be an easy pick.
I am not going against that. If I'm picking the Chiefs to win, I'm picking Mahomes to win MVP.
If Mahomes, let's say something crazy happens where he's not the MVP, who would be your second choice for MVP?
Trent McDuffie.
That's exactly. For some reason,
I'm like, you just said he was going to get an interception for him. It's like maybe it's his pick six and Trent McDuffie.
I'll be a little different then. To be a little bit different, I'm going to go. I'll say Isaiah Pacheco. Yeah. All the focus on McCaffrey being the better back, and then Pacheco ends up having a huge game, and he's MVP if Mahomes isn't. Because it's going to go to the quarterback more often than not. But if it isn't the quarterback, I'm going Pacheco, you're going McDuffie. Pick the shine. I added this one. A guy that we have not already mentioned, McDuffie would have been mine, but a guy that we haven't mentioned that's going to have a big role in this game or going to make a big play in this game. I picked the shine. It could be a play. It could be a whole game where you think this guy is going to really show up and make some big-time contributions. It could be the Niners. It could be the Chiefs. What's a pick the shine? Kind of a guy that, you know, you're like, you know, wonder if he could do something.
He was like Kadarius Toney last year.
Yeah, right. And Sky Moore had a touchdown catch.
Yeah. I'm gonna say Rashee Rice.
Rashee Rice?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I know he's trending up right now, but I'm gonna say Rashee Rice.
I'm going to go with a wide receiver as well. Would be ironic, wouldn't it, if the receivers of the Chiefs do something really special in the Super Bowl. But this guy's gonna do it in a different way. Richie James in the kick return, in the punt return.
Yeah.
Now, last year they had a big punt return with Kadarius Toney. Richie James has shown that he's been very reliable since the very first road game of the year in Jacksonville. I'll go way out on a limb there and say there's a guy nobody's talking about that can make a big play. And what I'm saying when I pick the shine, I'm not saying he's the MVP. I'm not saying he has 8 catches for 150 yards. I'm saying it's like Kadarius Toney or Sky Moore last year. Sky Moore had a punt return big that set up the Chiefs with Mahomes getting shoved out of bounds for a field goal to beat the Bengals. That was a gigantic play on the return by Sky Moore. Nobody thought that was coming. 2 weeks ago, the catch by MVS on the sideline, nobody was picking MVS to be a pick the shine. He made a gigantic play and hadn't been making it all year long. And so for me, I'm looking last year, Kadarius Toney had a touchdown catch, Sky Moore had a touchdown catch, and Kadarius Toney had a 65-yard punt return to the 5 that was the longest punt return in Super Bowl history at the time. So I'm just saying that Richie James is going to make one big play in this game. I don't think it'll probably be at wide receiver, although who knows, maybe it will be. Rashee Rice was limited participant in practice the other day, full participant yesterday. He's got a slight ankle thing, which, you know, could be concerning, I guess, if he re-aggravates in the Super Bowl, and Rice is your pick to shine in the Super Bowl. So there you have our picks and everything else. Now, you can listen to the game. If you can't watch it, you can listen to it. 4 o'clock pregame, Westwood One's coverage begins on Z96.3 Lake, and then kickoff is at 5:30. Now, in regards to some prop bets, everybody wants to gamble, right? I don't, but everybody else does. So, coin toss. What would you take if you had to bet on the coin toss? You taking heads or tails?
I usually probably would pick tails.
I always pick heads. Anytime I call a coin flip, I always call heads. Some people say tails never fails. I don't know how many times I've seen tails fail.
It fails.
It fails a lot. Yeah. I always go with heads. The coin toss. It's tails is the favorite. The coin toss has come up tails in 30 of the 57 Super Bowls. So pretty much 50-50. Will there be a two-point conversion attempted? I think there definitely will be.
Yeah.
So forth, so on. This is an interesting prop bet. The jersey number of the first touchdown score, over 22.5. So McCaffrey is number 22. Rashee Rice is number 4. George Kittle is 85. Kelsey's 87. Richie James would be 17. Mahomes, if he ran it in, is 15. Noah Gray's 83. So what do you think? First touchdown score. Debo Samuel's 19. I'm going to say it's under. It's going to be a running back. It's going to be Pacheco, McCaffrey, or Samuel's going to score the first touchdown, or the quarterback.
I think based on odds, the only one over that I would pick would be Kelsey, so I'm going to say under.
Yeah, Kelsey or Kittle would be mine, okay?
Yeah, maybe Kittle, but I would actually pick to under receivers before I'd go to Kittle for some reason.
I hear you. There's some people betting Nick Bosa will have two or more sacks in this game. I don't think he will. What else we got here for interesting stats you may be interested in? Okay, here's one for you. Mahomes' total passing yards, 260.5. You taking under or over?
Under.
I'm taking under as well. Total passing touchdowns, Mahomes, 1.5. You taking over or under?
Super Bowl, I'll take over.
I'll take over. Rushing yards for Mahomes, 26.5.
Whew. Over. I'm saying he makes a big run at some point.
I'm taking over. Patrick Mahomes' total interceptions is 0.5. Mahomes has thrown 4 interceptions and 3 Super Bowl appearances, including 2 against the Niners 5 years ago. Niners have forced interceptions 6 of the 7 Super Bowl appearances they've been
typical
in.
Typical odds for me, I'd say over.
Yeah, he's due to have one. Mm-hmm. What else we got here that's interesting? Okay, here's a really important one probably. Isaiah Pacheco total rushing attempts over or under 15.5?
Ooh.
I think for the Chiefs to win, it needs to be over.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Question is, do we think it's going to be that way?
Man, they know what they're doing with this, right?
Yeah, because I'm thinking 16.
I was going to say 15. I'm going to sit right under, like right at 15.
I'll say he gets over. He's going to have 17. There's my prediction. What else we got here? Rashee Rice total receiving yards, 66.5, under or over?
Well, if I'm picking him to shine, I'm going to say over.
I'm going to say under. I'm going to say under. MVS total receiving yards, 19.5.
Oh, wow.
I'll take over.
I'll take over on that, too.
And total receptions for Kelsey, 6.5. I'm taking under.
Yeah, I'm going to say under, too. I think there's going to be more focus there.
We mentioned the points over under 47.5 between the teams. The under is 28-28 all time in the Super Bowl. So it's hitting 500. Mm-hmm. 4 of the last 5 Super Bowls have been under. And you and I both said under. So the Chiefs total points over under 23.5. I said under. I said 23. You have over. Niners total points 24.5. I've got under. You've got under. We both have the Niners scoring 20. And what else we got here? You can bet 2,500 to 1 odds that the final score will be a scoring-ami, where it's never happened before. That would be a nice winning bet if it did happen. You know, what, 1917 or something like that?
Yeah, there's all kinds of them that are probably still left, but I wouldn't touch that one for sure.
Will there be overtime, yes or no? We both say no.
No.
Exact score prediction. If you go Chiefs 24, Niners 20, exact score prediction, it's 15,000 to 1.
Yeah.
So you could put $10 on that and he'd win $1,500 if it was exactly 24-20.
Yeah.
That'd be something.
I don't think I've ever picked the Super Bowl exactly right.
Me neither.
I had a 1 point 1 year when the Patriots and Packers played. I think the Packers won 35-21. I had 35-20.
Okay.
I just, for some reason, remember that when I make that prediction. I think it was probably just a prediction and a fun game I was playing with one of my classmates or something.
I guarantee you there's bets out there how much screen time Taylor Swift will get. There'll be all kinds of side bets about how long the anthem is, how long Usher's performance or whatever. Usher is the halftime entertainment. And go ahead, people, and just go ahead and put down your complaints early on social media before the halftime show even begins. Because we know there's a lot of people in North Central Kansas, I guarantee you, that are going to have nothing better to do than bitch, moan, and complain about the halftime show. It doesn't matter who the performer is. There will be somebody complaining. And it isn't just North Central Kansas. It's everywhere across the country and even the world. It doesn't matter. I mean, I've said this before. You could have Jesus himself be the halftime entertainment and somebody would complain about it.
There'd probably be a lot of people complaining about it.
Probably so. All right, the NFL honors last night. The Ravens quarterback Lamar Jackson was your most valuable player. No surprise there. Second MVP and yet to make it to a Super Bowl. I'll take these Super Bowl appearances in the rings with Mahomes. Coach of the year is the Browns head coach Kevin Stefanski, which I think is makes sense because of all the injuries they had, especially quarterback. Let's see. Comeback player of the year, Browns quarterback Joe Flacco, who edged out DeMar Hamlin of the Bills. Offensive player of the year was Christian McCaffrey. The defensive player of the year, some people thought it would be T.J. Watt. It was Myles Garrett of the Browns. Offensive rookie of the year, no surprise there, Texans quarterback C.J. Stroud. Defensive rookie of the year was Texans edge rusher Will Anderson Jr. Texans are going in the right direction.
They're trending up for sure.
Yeah, they are. Walter Payton, NFL man of the year. Mahomes was up for the Chiefs, but the winner is the Steelers defensive tackle Cameron Hayward. The Sportsmanship Award winner goes to, well, it's obvious we know who that's going to be, and that's Travis Kelce. Everybody knows that. I'm sorry, it's not. It is linebacker Bobby Wagner of the Seahawks, so I'm sure my 10-year-old's really excited about that. And the Deacon Jones Sack Leader Award went to Steelers edge rusher T.J. Watt. All right, time to look at college basketball, where tomorrow number 4 Kansas is back at home hosting number 13 Baylor. Jayhawks 18-5, 6-4 in the Big 12. Bears are 17-5, 6-3 in the conference. KU and Baylor tip-off 5 o'clock tomorrow, pregame at 4 o'clock or 4:30 on Z96.3 The Lake. It's pretty simple. Kansas has faced the same thing they were faced last Saturday. You're at home against a team you're going to face on the road later in the year. Just like Houston last Saturday, Kansas pretty much had to win that game to give themselves a chance to win the Big 12 title. This game's even bigger than that one last Saturday with the loss to K-State and Manhattan on Monday. Brian Haney, the voice of Jayhawks, was with us yesterday, and he said it was the most disappointing loss of the season for KU by far. He goes, I know the Central Florida game was frustrating, losing at West Virginia frustrating, but considering you worked so hard to be in the race and beat Houston on Saturday, played so well, turn around, lose to an unranked K-State team on Monday, you really have no room for error to win the Big 12. And you basically probably got to win 7 of your next 8 to close out the regular season to get the Big 12 title or a share of it. And you've got to play ranked teams 6 or 7 of the next 8 games in conference play, does Kansas, including a road trip to Baylor and a road trip at the end of the year to Houston. So there is not a lot of room for error at all for Kansas. If they have any chance of winning the Big 12 title, Kansas must win at home tomorrow against Baylor. And I expect them to. And then I think they're going to lose in Lubbock on Monday and give it right back. Why? Because Kansas is 1-4 on the road in Big 12 play. And, oh, by the way, I forgot this until Mr. Haney brought it up yesterday. It's Kevin McCullough's return to Lubbock. You don't think that place is going to be absolutely spiteful? That place can be super hostile. Now, I'm not saying Kansas can't win down there in Lubbock. They can, but based on what they're doing this year in the road, we thought K-State was pretty hostile, crazy environment. Iowa State was crazy. Texas Tech might be the craziest of them all because, on top of everything, McCullough's going back to Texas Tech. They don't like the fact he went to KU, just like a lot of OKC people didn't appreciate Kevin Durant going to the Golden State Warriors. So I think Kansas wins tomorrow, but I think they're going to give it right back on Monday. And with the way they don't play much of their bench, because their bench isn't very good, you got to play these guys so many minutes. And so you're going to play a home game on Saturday, and then you're going to have to fly all the way to Lubbock, and you're going to play on Monday. And this is the only quick turnaround they've got the rest of the year until we get to the Big 12 tournament. And if Kansas had their problems, as we know, when they did everything they could at home to beat Houston, and then turn around and had to just drive, they didn't have to fly, just drive down the road to get to Manhattan and lost that game. And Texas Tech is better than K-State, I think. And the environment might be even worse for KU to deal with, especially McCullough going back to his old roots. And Texas Tech, I know, has been scuffling right now, but we know everybody gets up for Kansas. That's kind of the Super Bowl for some of these teams. It's the one you mark on your calendar. Like, man, I make our season, we can beat KU. And if KU, you know, beats Baylor, you're coming off the same situation last Saturday. Emotional win, ESPN game day's there tomorrow. Kansas will be turned up. The fans will be turned up. And Kansas will be emotionally spent and do exactly what they need to do, and they will win tomorrow is my prediction. If they don't, they're toast in this conference, that's for sure. But I expect them to win. They win tomorrow. Monday's a horrible situation for Kansas. It's worse than the situation they had Monday with Kansas State. It's worse. And they didn't come through in that situation. So I think it's going to be a nice short-lived, oh, we're back in the race here, or we're right there. Yeah, you're right there. But you still got a lot of tough games coming up, and you still got to go to Texas Tech. You got to go to Waco, and you got to go to Houston. There is no and Oklahoma, by the way. Kansas has one of the tougher schedules in the Big 12 when it comes to men's basketball with the unbalanced schedule. Some teams caught breaks where they didn't have to play a team twice, or some teams didn't have to go to Lawrence this year, or some teams didn't have to go to Ames. You know, some don't have to go to Houston. Yeah, so this is a situation where Kansas not only has to win, I think, tomorrow, they've got to follow it up with a win Monday in Lubbock to have a chance to stay in the Big 12 race, because they're 6-4. Everybody's saying it. If they end up 13-5 is going to win this thing, there's no doubt in anybody's mind 13-5 is going to win it. Maybe 12-6 gets you a share. Kansas doesn't like to share, so they don't get too excited about that. Even if they want to go, even if that 12-6 is the mark you have to get to, they got to go 6-2 with a really tough stretch with road games at Lubbock, at Norman, at Baylor, and at Houston. And that's just assuming that they would win all their home games, which are not gimmies. Baylor tomorrow, Texas at home, they're talented. BYU, that'd be the team that probably somehow find a way to beat Kansas there. And in K-State, you know, you expect them to win that one, a little revenge game, and that's senior night. Kansas don't lose on senior night. At some point, Kansas got to find a way to win a game on the road, and that's going to have to be Monday. And if they lose tomorrow, it won't matter as much. But I expect them to win tomorrow, lose Monday. If they win tomorrow, win Monday, okay, now we can start jumping back on the wagon that KU's got a good chance to win this conference.
Oh, yeah. If they do, if they win both of these games, no doubt. I think that, you would, your perception of what Kansas is right now would change a little bit, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're following trends and you look at how all that goes, I would definitely be picking KU to win tomorrow and to lose on Monday like you would. Mm-hmm. And so then you're putting yourself, you're right there at five losses. So if you think 13-5 is what it takes to win outright, you got to win the rest of your games, right? If you win tomorrow and lose on Monday. So I'm with you. I think they'll come out focused, ready to go tomorrow. You know, if I was going to throw something on my app, I would put it on KU for sure, for tomomorrow.
But, upset with the way how they played on Monday.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so, but yeah, you're right. If they don't follow it up with a win in Lubbock, then what did it mean?
Well, that's what Haney's talking about with the win over Houston. You gave it right
exactly
back on the road against unranked K-State team. Here's Bill Self, keys to victory against Baylor.
Defend the arc. You know, we got to do a better job defending the arc. Although there's been times where we've done it very well, but there's been times where we haven't. And the way they run ball screens, it makes it hard to defend the arc. But that's what we'll have to do and be able to. They haven't played a lot, but I wouldn't be surprised if they play zone. So being able to attack their zone.
Okay, so Houston's atop the conference 7-3, Baylor 6-3, Iowa State 6-3, Kansas 6-4, TCU, Texas Tech 5-4, and Tech has lost three in a row. So if Kansas would win, boom, there they are. They're at 7-4. They're right there, still within a game of first place, and that's assuming that things go the way you might think in the Big 12 this week. By the way, K-State's on the road at number 21, BYU at 9:00 tomorrow night on ESPN2. K-State 5-5 in the conference. They're only a game behind Kansas. TCU's at Iowa State at 1:00. West Virginia travels to Texas at 2:00. Number 5, Houston's at Cincinnati. Listen, that is not going to be an easy game for Houston. Number 23, Texas Tech hosts Central Florida at 3:00. And Oklahoma is at home in Bedlam, taking on Oklahoma State at 6:00. I want to touch upon this before we get into Big 12 women's basketball and then the NBA trade deadline to close out the show. You remember Scott Pollard?
Definitely.
Always a funny dude, just a unique individual, unique characteristics, and unique character. And he was a very good player for the Kansas Jayhawks, outstanding player. He was drafted. He played in the NBA for a while. He's 6'11". And this story here from ESPN, Scott Pollard's size helped him to play more than a decade in the NBA. That's right. Scott Pollard played in the NBA for a decade. He earned a championship ring with the Boston Celtics in 2008, and now his size might be killing him, literally. Scott Pollard needs a heart transplant, an already dire predicament that has made more difficult because few donors can provide him with a pump big and strong enough to supply blood to his extra-large body. He was admitted to intensive care at the Vanderbilt University Medical Center in Nashville earlier this week on Tuesday. He'll wait there until a donor surfaces who is big enough to be a match. "I'm staying here until I get a heart," Pollard said in a test message. "My heart got weaker. Doctors agree this is my best shot at getting a heart quicker." At nearly 7 feet tall, with a playing weight of 260 pounds, Pollard's size rules out most potential donors for a heart to replace the one that, due to a genetic condition that was likely triggered by a virus he contracted in 2021, has been beating. His heart's been beating an extra 10,000 times per day. Half of his siblings have the same condition, as did his father, who died at the age of 54 when Scott was 16. Scott Pollard right now is 48. Pollard said in a recent interview, "That was an immediate wake-up call. You don't see a lot of seven-footers walking around, do you? So I've known that my entire life, just because I had that seared in my brain as a 16-year-old that, yeah, being tall is great, but I'm never going to see 80. A 1997 first-round NBA draft pick out of the University of Kansas, Pollard helped lead Kansas to Sweet 16 in four straight seasons. He was a useful big man off the bench for much of his NBA career, which stretched over 11 years and five teams. He played 55 seconds in the Cavaliers' trip to the NBA Finals in 07. He won a ring with the Celtics despite being injured and not able to play in the Finals in 08. He retired after that season, dabbled in broadcasting. I know he's worked with Brian Haney and others. He even did a little acting. He was a contestant on a 32nd season of Survivor, where he was voted out on day 27 with eight castaways remaining. Pollard is 48. He has been aware of the condition that he has since his father died in the 90s. And it wasn't until he got sick 3 years ago that it began to affect his quality of life. So have Scott Pollard in your prayers, ladies and gentlemen. He is needing a heart transplant, and he's only 48 years of age. I mean, I remember watching Pollard play basketball. He was the consummate team player. He would, if he needed him to rebound, he rebounded. He played defense, he played defense. He needed him to commit a hard foul, he'd commit a hard foul. You need him to dive on the floor, he would. He'd take a charge, he'd do that. He blocked shots. He wasn't expected to score a ton. Sometimes he could score. And he was a, you know, to me, he was a little bit like Nick Collison, except Collison was way more polished offensively, but a little bit like Collison. And this is where people get caught up in the NBA and pros and college athletics, especially basketball. You know, you get caught up in, oh my God, you know, this guy from Kansas is going to, he's not going to do well in the NBA. Why did they take him? And this guy's going to be a star in the NBA. You know what? You got a lot of Kansas guys that you thought were going to be stars. Xavier Henry, Josh Selby, and there's others that really haven't done that great.
Ben McLemore,
who's had a decent career,
yeah,
but not what you maybe expected.
No.
And then there's guys like, and Nick Collison was a high draft pick, don't get me wrong. He had a long career, but he knew for his career to last, he had to settle into the role, which was play defense, pick and roll basketball, set screens, hit the mid-range jumper, post up from time to time. But he was never the number one option offensively in the NBA. Scott Pollard was not a superstar at KU. He was a really good player on a really good talented teams in the 90s that should have been to the Final Four a few times, but some weird things happened. And Scott Pollard had an 11-year career in the NBA, and I guarantee you, when he was playing at KU, you didn't say, that guy's going to play 11 years in the NBA.
No.
But he did. And now he's fighting for his life, and he needs a heart transplant. So only 48.
Some people that you need out there that need to change the game in different ways, right? Yeah. And Scott Pollard was obviously a guy that you could put out there to get under people's skin, too.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like he could do that with the best of them. And to have somebody like that on your team, it can be a very big boost and a benefit as well. So
absolutely,
he was a dirty work type of player, you know, a junkyard dog before they started calling Jerome Williams that, right? Like, you know, I think that's who he was, and yeah, it is sad at that age that you got to be going through that, but like I said, it looks like he was prepared for it, so that's always good, but you don't want to have to see anybody go through that.
I always remember him painting his fingernails and stuff.
Yeah.
Very unique individual, but you need people like that. All right, women's hoops. KU picked up a win last night. The Jayhawk women, 69-52 over Houston. They're 6-6 in conference play, 13-10 overall. Number 8, K-State women look to stop a two-game skid. They will be hosting Oklahoma State and former K-State assistant coach and Hoxie native J.C. Hoyt. Oklahoma State is 4-7 in conference play. That's at 4 o'clock on ESPN Plus from Bramlage Coliseum. Emily Ebert is on the Oklahoma State team. Used to play at K-State as well. The NBA trade deadline was yesterday. The Sixers acquired Buddy Hield, former Sooner, from the Pacers. Sent Patrick Beverley to the Bucks. The Thunder picked up Gordon Hayward from the Hornets, which is interesting, for Trey Mann and Davis Bertans. And that'll be a rental because he's going to be a free agent after this year. And that's, I think, a really smart pickup by the Thunder. I like it. The Thunder are doing great things. You know, I've been saying this for a couple years. Wait till the Thunder put it all together. But they put it all together way sooner than I anticipated.
Yeah.
And I kept talking about them a little bit last year. I'm like, man, they're an up and rising team, and they got in the play-in tournament and so forth and so on. And then you see what they've done this year. And them and the Timberwolves are young teams, but the Thunder are super young. And now you mix in a nice little veteran there with some experience. and he's going to fit in nicely. He's not a selfish player. He doesn't have a huge ego. And Gordon Hayward, I like what the Thunder did. And, you know, we're sitting here before after last season going, oh, you know, the Thunder might be a factor here in a few years, and they definitely should be a team that will make the playoffs next year. Well, here we are next year, and they're the number one seed in the West. Them and the Timberwolves are right there at the top, along with the Nuggets and the Clippers. And, you know, people talk about the Nuggets. People talk about the Clippers been red hot. And people talk about Vincent Edwards. And Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is one of the best players in the NBA. He was all-pro first team last year. They've got other great young players as well. Nobody even knows the name of the coach for Oklahoma City Thunder across the country. And if you are a number one seed right now, sitting at the top of the Western Conference, which is the better conference by far than the Eastern Conference, if you're sitting atop the conference standings after playing 50 of 80-some games, you're an NBA contender. You're a championship contender. You're an NBA Finals contender. And not enough people are talking about that. And now you add a guy that can shoot the ball for the perimeter. He can post up. He's a good defender. Granted, he's had injury problems. He's missed some time this year with a calf injury. But there's not a big risk there. The Thunder have a million draft picks. And they moved a couple players. And they won't sign him long-term more than likely, which he's 34 anyway. So it's not much risk, but I think there's a lot of reward. And if he doesn't play that well, or he's always hurt, they're still pretty good. They've proven without him. So I thought that was a really good pickup for the OKC.
Well, yeah, and you're in a situation where you have all these draft picks stockpiled. So if you want to make a move, yes, and whatever you feel like the worth of the player is that you're trying to get, it's pretty easy to make that move, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's the situation they were in, and they made the move. And, yeah, I think a guy like that can only really help in the long run. And you don't see like there's any downside to it or anything.
No, and the other thing, too, and I've been talking about this for a year or two now, is that they can go out and get that last piece of the puzzle, go make a big-time trade for a star player, or go grab a free agent big-time player. I mean, they're sitting pretty with draft picks and with the money situation. Oklahoma City's sitting really good. Now, as of today, the Timberwolves and the Nuggets are tied for the number one seed in the West. The Thunder are half game out. Clippers are only a game out. Clippers have been red hot lately. Suns are moving up. Have you noticed they're playing well? They're up to a five spot. And then the interesting stuff at the end, the Warriors wouldn't even be in the play-in tournament if it ended today, although they've won three in a row. They're 11 spot. Dusty Spurs are the worst team in the Western Conference, but there's a bright future ahead yet with Wembanyama and other young players. The Mavericks start out great. They're now down to an eight seed. Sacramento's 29-21, and they're a seven seed, for crying out loud. The Lakers are sitting there in the nine spot, so they're going to be probably in a play-in tournament. In the East, the Celtics are the best team. They're the best team in basketball record-wise, but you know who's the number two seed now? Is the Cleveland Cavaliers. They've won eight in a row. I didn't realize they're having that good a year. Dean Wade leading the Cavaliers.
I didn't know they were that good either. You asked if I saw the Suns creeping back up, and I'm like, absolutely not.
Yeah.
It's hard for me to pay attention to the NBA at this time of year.
The Bucks and the Knicks are tied for the three spot. I didn't know the Knicks were 33-19. Julius Randle, they lost with a separated shoulder, but they made a big trade yesterday. Bohan Bogdanovic, they picked him up, who's a guy that can hit threes and can screen and roll, and a lot of people think that was a great trade by the Knicks. And I've kind of joked that the Knicks might be better without Julius Randle, and they're playing pretty well. Well, yeah, they're playing pretty well without him for the most part. They've won eight of the last 10. So the Knicks are right there in the thick of things. And the Sixers got Buddy Hield, and they're in the five spot. But Embiid, we don't know if he'll come back and play this year. And if he can't come back and play, the Sixers are toast.
They're not in the conversation if Joel Embiid's not playing.
And to tell you how bad the East is compared to the Western Conference, in the Western Conference, you've got nine teams with winning records. In the Eastern Conference, you have eight teams, so not a big difference there. But the Warriors are in the 11th spot. They're a game under 500. In the East, the Hawks are 7 under .500, and they're the 10th spot in a play-in tournament. And the Bulls are 2 games under .500, and they're in the 9th spot. So there's no doubt the East is a little more top-heavy, and the West is way more depth. When you've got the Lakers at 9, the Mavericks at 8, and the Warriors at 11 in your conference, and the Kings are at 7, I left out the Pelicans. They're good. They're at 6. I mean, the West is absolutely stacked. You win the West. Why can't you win it all?
It's been that way for quite a while.
Yes, it has. Yes, it has.
You know, there might be an outlier year or two here or there. Sure. But, you know, for the most part, since the lockout, really, in 98, 99, right? Mm-hmm. Like, the West has really been where the depth and the really good teams, and, you got to build over there, and for forever, that's why we said LeBron would never go to the West. But
mm-hmm. Yeah,
eventually
he
did and went to the Lakers, but that's probably the only place he'd go in the West.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. All right, high school basketball tonight.
Yeah, tonight we got Rock Hills at Lincoln on Katy Country 94, katycountry94.com. Pregame at 5:50, tip off at 6 o'clock, and you can catch the games on Katy Country 94, also online at katycountry94.com here this evening.
Have a fantastic Super Bowl party or whatever you're doing. Here's one thing with the Chiefs getting really good that's kind of messed me up. I used to host some Super Bowl parties. The Chiefs were never in it, so I didn't really care that I missed some of the action. I talked with friends. We played pool. We did squares. I did all this other stuff. Papa Shot, it was all great and all, and I couldn't hear the announcers, and I missed half the commercials. But once the Chiefs start being great and they're in the Super Bowl all the time, I don't want anybody around me. Do not come around me and talk while I'm trying to watch the game. Shut the hell up. Oh, that's right. You aren't going to have a chance to talk to me because you aren't invited to my house. The doors will be locked. I'll be downstairs in the basement. I'll be watching it. The Chiefs hopefully hoisting their third Lombardi trophy during the Mahomes era, which would be the Chiefs' fourth Super Bowl championship. Mm-hmm. They had one back in the day with Lynn Dawson. And then next thing you know, you're talked about one of the best organizations of all time in football if you get to that one. Right, because four is an exclusive club. There's only a handful of organizations that have done that. Patriots have the most at six.
Yeah, Steelers
and the Patriots, I believe, have six.
Yeah,
and the Cowboys.
I think they both had. Yeah, the Cowboys and 49ers.
Cowboys have been stuck on five for a very long time.
Yeah.
Let's hope they're stuck on that a little bit longer after the Chiefs beat the Niners on Sunday.
Yes,
you feeling good about it?
I feel like I felt most games this year with the Chiefs. I don't feel overly great. I don't feel like terribly bad.
Do you feel better about this one compared to the Raven game? Do you feel better about this game compared to the Raven game, or worse?
I would say, actually, I would probably lean a little toward worse.
Me too.
I feel almost the same, but right. If you're asking me which matchup I liked better,
I'm kind of
which is basically what you're asking me,
right?
I'd say I'd like the Ravens matchup a little better just based on circumstances.
But you don't have to be on the road. You don't have to play outside on grass. You're going to be inside, which is that good or bad? But with the Niners, with their weapons, does that help their speed and situation? Who knows? We'll find out Sunday. Pregame at 4 o'clock. Kickoff 5:30. Chiefs 49ers Super Bowl 58. Go Chiefs!
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.